This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello, welcome to the Carcast and Edmonds podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, here with Alistair Weaver. How you doing?
I'm good, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing well. We've got some interesting things to talk about. I know the big news this week has been the Porsche hybrid, the 911 hybrid. So I want to get into that. I'm sure you're going to have some thoughts on that and some other EV stuff that's going on. Before we get started, let me tell you guys about Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. They have every stat, every matchup, even live odds while the games are being played. When the game's over, you can head on over to our online casino. You can get in a game of blackjack or poker or any one of our slot games. There's over 150 games available. Head to the website today or get in on the action on our mobile app. And don't forget to use the promo code BELIEVE for 50% welcome bonus off your first deposits. B-L-E-A-V, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus. Bet Online, where the game starts.
All right. B-E-L, BELIEVE? How else do you spell BELIEVE?
B-L-E-A-V.
B-L-E-A-V. E-A-V, there you go.
That's how you spell it. There's no B-E. It's just B-L-E-A-V.
Got it.
It's a crafty little way.
I see what they've done. Them,
yeah, B-leave is how they're doing it. Yeah.
Oh, B-leave. I've got it. Sorry, it took me a while. Yeah. I'm tired. I've been up half the night.
B-leave.
B-leave. B-leave. Got it. Yeah. Should we talk about cars instead of the ads? Let's do that.
All right. Let's talk about the Chevy Silverado. The Chevy Silverado has been. There was a delay on it on the EV version. It, you know, Lightning came out. They had some pretty good sales. They're still selling fairly well, despite the price drops and rebates and stuff that have happened over, I don't know, this past year or so. But Chevy Silverado, and then it was delayed. I think we saw it at LA Auto Show, and and it looks good. More sort of a, unibody kind of look to it, and you look at it initially and you're like, I don't know, it's like a giant Honda Ridgeline, but it didn't look bad to me in person. But if you had a chance to drive it yet, or did you
I
get
haven't
up on
personally,
it in person?
We Edmonds have. I think you're right. I mean, this has been delayed and delayed. It's a different truck to the F-150 Lightning. Because with the F-150 Lightning's ladder frame chassis, it's not as bespoke as this. This is this is in theory much more of a ground up electric truck, and that should bring key advantages. And it does. It's very spacious. It's got an estimated range. Can't wait to get it back and range test this properly. But they're saying 440 miles. So there's a lot of things in its favor. It's going to be very fast. Was it 780 pounds-feet of torque, 754 horsepower? This is this part of this family of vehicles that GM's trying to do that we started with the Hummer, and then we've seen things like the Blazer and everything else. So there's a lot of shared technology across all of these vehicles. The challenge we found is that as the kickoff one is that the first edition, which is the one that's available now, which has got all the bells and whistles, is basically $100,000. And we went out and drove it, and much like the Lightning, you think this is there's a lot to like here. It's very practical, it's very spacious, the range is decent, but it's $100,000.
And that's the only option right now.
That's the only option right now. And yeah. GM's whole EV strategy, you know, think about the delays and the problems that we had with the Blazer that Edmonds owned. Now they're finally getting into the market with the Silverado. But really, we almost need to reserve judgment a little bit till we get them into a more affordable price point. And GM will point and say, well, actually, you know, Rivians are getting up there. If you want a platinum version of the F-150, you can almost make it $100,000. And most people are probably going to end up leasing them and things like that, because that's the way with with these electric vehicles, but it's a lot of money. And it's not such a standout vehicle that you think, wow, it's a lot of money, but it's really worth it. And, you know, Ford struggling, we talked about this last week, Ford struggling to shift Lightnings, Rivian struggling to shift the R1T, there's an update to that coming. I think Chevy's going to struggle to shift this at the moment. They need to get it in at a lower price point, and that will come, and we're looking forward to driving it. But while we were there, we were also driving the Equinox SUV, and we've just gone live with that content. Now, this I'm actually a lot more excited about. I think this is much closer to what we actually need in the market right now. This is a... It started off, you may remember, that it was going to be 30 grand, and everybody was like, wow, this is going to be sensational, 30 grand. The reality is tends to be the way. It's 35 grand, but then if you get the tax credit, you're buying it, you're going to be 28 and a half grand, or I'm sure there'll be very competitive lease deals as well. Now, this feels a lot more what the market needs, what the US car shopper needs. It's a good-sized vehicle. It makes the whole Blazer EV look almost irrelevant, because you're getting a hell of a lot of what the Blazer offers for almost half the price in some cases. And we came away pretty impressed with it. Again, it's not trying to be something that it doesn't need to be. Entry-level model, front-wheel drive, single motor, 213 horsepower. You might say, oh, well, that's not, you know, that's not going to be fast enough. It's not crazy. But, you know, most people don't need to do 0 to 60 in 4 seconds in what is basically a you know, family car. It will be, it's, you know, we've driven it, it's sort of fast enough. And if you do want to go quicker, there will be an all-wheel drive version. What's that got? Nearly 300 horsepower, 288 or something like that. So you can have the power if you want it, but I think this is much more of a sensible proposition. We don't need to go 0 to 60 in 4 seconds in a, you know, family runaround. And that's what this is. So yeah, I'm quite excited by this. I think this is going to be a, I'm not going to use the word game changer because I loathe it with a passion. But, you know, we've now got the EX30, the Volvo, in at a sensible price point. This is a, you know, this is a sensible price point. Model 3, obviously, is the new one, is a big improvement. We're starting to see more affordable EVs. And if you can drive away in one of these for, you know, 30 grand with the tax credits, that's quite a lot of car for 30 grand.
You know, on paper, I agree with you, but I think there's a little bit of a reputation blow with the Blazer being such a flop as an EV coming out from GM, and all the issues that you guys had with it. I hesitate to jump on the Equinox bandwagon so quickly without really testing it. And of course, seeing what you guys think and maybe owning one for a while or driving one for a while. And the platform for the Blazer, how that sort of trickles down or up, if you will, to, you know, the shared platform that that Cadillac is using and even Acura is using or Honda is using. All of those vehicles that share that platform make me a little nervous. It's not to say that those things couldn't be, the issues couldn't be worked out, and the other car manufacturers that are sharing that, the other brand managers, if you will, like Cadillac, and then the manufacturers like Acura and Honda, they might have been able to fix some of the issues. But I don't know. I think the Equinox could be something interesting, but I think the issues with Blazer are going to take its toll on the initial sales of Equinox.
I hope not. I mean, you're right. It's just looking at the data at the moment. You know, the entry level model isn't here, so we're looking at 43,000 as the starting price, but then the cheaper one will come. I hope not. I think GM has got enough clout, enough people behind it, enough money, enough technology that they'll get there. And, you know, we talk about this every week. Is this a wobble in the market? Is this something more fundamental? My hunch is it's a wobble. And, you know, if you can get more of these vehicles out there, more people into them, then, you know, we'll demand will slowly start to take off again. A lot of the problems with the Blazer, you know, the Blazer had a lot of problems. I think there'll be a lot of heads rolling and a lot of angst within GM about that. They should have done a better job. But you know, in 10 years' time, we'll probably have forgotten all about it. So Equinox is what the market needs. Whether they're making much money on them at this price point, who knows? Probably not. But I'm excited about it. It's I'm so much more excited about that than I am about the Blazer or any of the other higher price stuff.
You know, and going back to Silverado, kind of seeing now the financial hit that a company like Ford has taken on their EV initiative, GM has to kind of look at something like the Silverado and say, we can't go too far into the deep end of a lost leader. Like, we need, this needs to be a $100,000 truck because we need to make some money on it. And if we're losing money on it, we can't be losing a lot of money on it. Like, you know, you look at what Ford is doing. And of course, in, you know, the Ford Lightning, because it has several options available ranging from, you know, the low 60 something thousand dollars up to about $100,000. When you add on options, we know already with so many cars that when you add on options from the factory, those things are usually very profitable. Right. Like, take example, anything that Porsche is doing, there's so much profit in the options. So when you look at a Lightning Platinum and going, well, you know, the larger wheels and the sunroof and all that's all profitable stuff. So maybe they lose less money on a $100,000 Lightning than they do on an XLT. That's, you know, 63 grand. Silverado is saying we need a fully optioned vehicle so we can build in some padding into that truck. We can't just have a stripped down model and lose a lot of money. That's my guess.
Yes. And I think everybody knew that it was going to take time, and everybody was going to have to kind of wear this for a few years. And now we've probably having a bit more of a, you know, a bit more of a hiccup than people anticipated. So, you know, we shall see. I think Jim Farley, the CEO of Ford, just came out this morning and started talking about hybrids being more profitable than gas and, yeah, you know, how all this is going to shape out. And, you know, there's also a lot of, you know, concern about what happens in the election at the end of the year, what's happening in China, where demand in Europe is slowing down. Of course, all these are global companies, maybe not the trucks so much, but a lot of these vehicles are global vehicles. So it's all going to shake out. It's all going to shake out. And I think, you know, we will, when the history books write about this kind of extraordinary transition from gasoline to electric, you know, this will just be a chapter along the journey. Or I might be completely wrong. And, you know, maybe Mr. Trump will get in and tear up the rule book and get rid of the incentives. And suddenly we'll be all driving around in V8s again. I think that moment has passed. I think we're too far down the road. And I think the rest of the world is too far down the road.
Yeah.
But who knows? It's an extraordinary time, and as you say, nobody's really making any money. Tesla are starting to get into all sorts of tricks and games and marketing and everything else that didn't exist before. So you know, we'll see how it shakes out.
And talking about not making money off of EVs, so here in California, we have something like 1.1 million registered EVs now in the state of California. So now California, which really pushed on everyone getting EVs, they made it their mission for Dubai. Well, now they're losing roughly $200 million a year in gas tax. So now they need to go out. Now that they forced EVs, they need to go find that extra $200 million. So they want to do a mileage tax, and they're running it. They're rolling out a pilot program, I believe, in August, where you can actually opt into this, which is weird. So if you have an EV, don't opt in because you're not paying now. Why would you elect to pay? But if you had a gas engine vehicle, you could swap out your gas tax for, essentially, I don't know all the details, but for a mileage tax. And it could be somewhere between 2, 3, or 4 cents per mile. And they were trying to give, they like posted some sort of calculator going, hey, if you end up paying the equivalent of $27 a month in a gas tax, if you drove 1,000 miles, maybe the mileage tax at 2 cents a mile would be $20. And I'm like, it's fine. They're trying to get the gas engine people to go, hey, if I go to a mileage tax, maybe I'll save a little bit of money. But if the mileage tax gets approved, then every one of the EVs is going from not paying to paying. And that's so they're using the gas engine drivers to get this thing passed. So all the EV people don't have a choice. They got to pay, because nobody with an EV would go, yes, I would like to start paying per mile, please.
Yes. I lived through the introduction of the congestion charge in London, and this was a very left-wing mayor. I mean, properly left of Bernie Sanders mayor.
Yeah.
Right out there. And he introduced a policy which, to be honest, is very... It was basically penalizing those on lower incomes, because what they effectively did is say, right, you're going to pay to come into London. And... of course, like wealthy people, it was, I think it started off being like £10 or so, about $12 or something. And wealthy people are like, this is a pain, but I'm going to have to, I'll pay it. And then, you know, it was penalizing those on lower incomes. And now they've made it all about emissions. And a friend of mine was saying, well, I've got this old diesel that everybody told me I should buy, and now it doesn't meet the emission standards, so I can't drive my old car into the center of London. So now I've got to go and find a new car, but actually I'm not in a position to afford this. So you start twisting yourselves up in knots. And if you're not careful, you actually end up penalizing the people who need their vehicle. So this is not people, we're going to talk about the new 911. This is not people, you know, swanning around in 911s because they can afford it. This is people who are, who nurses, things like that, who need to drive into the city, drive to hospitals, that kind of thing. So I've seen it in action. It wasn't pretty, but we'll see.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll see how it goes. But there's always just sort of this cause and effect of things, you say we really want everyone to drive EVs and get out of gas cars, okay, but then the state loses a bunch of money, now they got to go find where that money's going to come from, and didn't really think about it ahead of time, and there's a lot of other things like similar in California, the $20 minimum wage and sort of the effects that's having. I think it's going to, it's not car related, but that's going to seem to end up in more unemployment than it is people making more money. Just kind of a weird cycle for sure, without maybe just needs a little bit more thought across the board before they.
I mean, the basic principle of
these rules,
the basic principle of paying for what you use is fundamentally sound.
Yeah.
It's just how it's applied and then how it catches people out.
Right. Right. Okay. Let's
it almost got a bit political then. Should we just go back to talking about cars that go
fast? Yeah, let's just talk about cars again. Let's talk about new 911.
Yeah, this is exciting because this has been a long time coming. There's been all these rumors. What was it gonna be? What does a hybrid 911 actually look like? And the reality is Porsche's done a pretty interesting job of creating a performance hybrid and using the hybridization to give you more oomph, and called it a GTS. We should actually, maybe before we get into the hybrid system and how that works, there was a load of fuss on social this week that probably most people listening saw, that was all about Porsche's got rid of the rear seats, Porsche's got rid of the manual gearbox, Porsche's got rid of the key, Porsche's got rid of the analog instruments. And I just, yeah, before we came on air, I was just chatting to some of the guys at Porsche. I was like, what's the real story going on here? So maybe we should break it down and go through it one by one. So the rear seats, if you buy a coupe, you can now have the rear seats are now a no cost option. So you have to tick the box on the order form. And let's face it, a lot of people order these 911s from scratch. The rationale is it saves a bit of weight, weight optimization. And in theory, if you don't have the rear seats, you've got more luggage capacity because there's a bit more space for duffel bags and stuff like that. The reality is that most people are expected to put them in because they're useful for throwing kids in, and maybe it'll protect the residual values and things like that. So it's a bit of a gimmick, but you can now take them out. You can now opt to have them or not have them.
Yeah.
But if you buy the Targa or the Cabriolet, you get the rear seats because that's what there's no delete option. It's just the coupe, where they're trying to say this is more performance orientated, so have it as a two-seater if you want.
Right.
Most people won't. So that's the rear seats. Manual gearbox. Now, there's a nuance that had actually passed me by as well. When Porsche introduced the 992, which is the current generation 911, and this new one is the 992.2, they didn't offer the manual gearbox on the standard Carrera. They only offered it on the Carrera T, which, if you remember, the T has kind of got GTS bits. It's kind of the driver's choice. So at the moment, as they roll out the 992.2, the updated version, they're just offering the Carrera and the GTS. Now, the Carrera doesn't have the manual gearbox because they don't have the manual gearbox. And the GTS is a hybrid, so you can't have a manual gearbox because the technology doesn't work. So in all likelihood, when they reintroduce the S and the T at some point, probably in the not too distant future, then you will see the return of the manual gearbox. And of course, you'll have the GT3 and the Touring and blah, blah, blah. So I think anybody who's like jumping up and down saying the manual gearbox is gone is probably getting a bit ahead of themselves. For the moment,
the base 911, no manual, and the new GTS hybrid, no manual.
So the GTS will not have a manual, period. Yeah. And the standard Carrera, if you want a Carrera with a manual gearbox, you want that engine, base engine with a manual gearbox, you have to buy, you're going to end up buying the T, which they will do slightly later in the life cycle. So that's the reality there. The bit about the dials, well, Porsche's got rid of the analog dials, and that basically what you've got is a screen, and then you can have the analog dials in digital form if they like. I think that's a bit of a shame, at least for the rev counter. I think the old one had an analog, if I remember rightly, the outgoing one had an analog rev counter and then digital dials around it, which I still think would be a better solution.
Yeah.
I think that's a shame. There's still something quite beautiful. It's a bit like a manual watch, isn't it? It's a bit like an automatic watch or something. There's still something quite beautiful about seeing a kind of mechanical rev counter go up and down, but maybe I'm just old. But then 911 customers are old, and you and I are still too young technically to be 911 customers. And a bit poor as well.
Probably more of a financial limitation than it is an age limitation.
A bit of both, yeah.
So getting a little bit into, so first of all, the we're looking at the GTS, the hybrid. You know, it's going to be quick, right? Porsche saying 0 to 60, 2.9 seconds.
And bear in mind that Porsche historically is actually tends to understate its performance claims. You know, we tend to better Porsche's claims. But I think our test track numbers, top of my head, for the previous Carrera, the base Carrera, were like 3.6 to 60. So in a 911, it's all about traction, and they just put the power down so well, and the gearbox works so well, and the traction. It's just, they've always been fantastic at getting off the line. But yeah, so 2.9, I would expect we'd probably do something like 2.7, something like that, without a rollout. If history serves, that's what we'd expect.
Now, I didn't see this. Maybe you have this, but is the GTS, the hybrid, all-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive? Or is it
you can have either. You can have either.
So I thought it was going to be available in either one. Yeah.
So you can have the whole gamut of it. You can have the coupe, you can have the Targa, you can have the cabriolet, you can have rear wheel drive, you can have all wheel drive. And the nice thing about the GTS is it already comes with quite a lot of options. I was playing around before we came on air with specking one up, because it's always kind of interesting to see like what actually would the price be with Porsches. But the nice thing about the GTS is it already comes with quite a lot of kit. So
the base price is like $165,000. Like
that, there is
just,
that.
They
yeah,
just
there is
keep
that.
Creeping up and up.
Yeah. So yes. So that's the sort of flip. That's the flip side of the argument. So I spec mine out to be 178, which is presumably plus destination. So yeah, 165. I've got it here actually. 164,900 equipment. If I really like, there's like a really cool green that they're doing. 11.5 grand handling delivery. 2 grand, which is 178,465, or by their calculation, a monthly payment of $3,236, which is a pretty decent mortgage. That's a pretty chunky mortgage.
Yeah, that's definitely a hefty payment for sure.
I've been told in the past that the average household income of a 911 customer now is north of $1 million, which is an extraordinary sum. Household income, fine, but you know, that's two. Even if it's two salaries, it's two big salaries.
It's right, for sure. It's massive. And looking at the hybrid technology, you're right. When you start reading the initial description and not picturing what it is, it seems like it can get a little confusing. But to start, they're basically saying there's two electric motors, one in the transmission and then one in a single turbo instead of a twin turbo. There's a single electric motor driven turbo.
Yeah, so it's, and the important thing to realize, it's not like a plug-in hybrid. This is not, so this is actually quite a small battery. So it's 1.9 kilowatts. To give you some sort of context, you know, a lot of EVs will have around, you know, pure EVs will have around 70 kilowatt hours of battery. So they're saying it's about the same size as a 12 volt battery. So what they've been quite clever with, I think there's two issues with the 911. A, although they've got bigger and bigger as time has gone on, there's still not a huge amount of space to stuff lots of batteries. And also, you're adding a lot of mass. So they are saying, and you know, this hasn't been on our scales, they're saying that basically it's 103 pounds heavier than the outgoing GTS. So even with, so with an 8-speed double clutch transmission, with the motors, with the battery, you're talking about 100-pound increase. The last GTS on our scales, 3,600 pounds. So you know, it's not a massive percentage increase. So I think that's something they'll have worked really hard on, just making sure that it just doesn't pop out too heavy.
Yeah, and the hybrid battery, as you were saying, is in the front of the car. They're trying to balance the weight a little bit more, where you would normally have maybe an extended range gas tank. They're putting it there. So you get a little bit smaller fuel tank, if you will, and in place of, like you said, it's about the size of a 12 volt battery, just a little bit longer, I think, maybe like two batteries, like sort of side by side. And if you think about it, that's probably pretty close to almost the weight that they're adding there.
And then the new engine, 3.6 flat six, of course, one electric turbocharger, say not the twin turbo that it had before. When you put it all together, 532 horsepower, 449 pounds-feet of torque. So that's kind of getting up there with what the, I'd have to look it up, but like a 991 turbo, I don't think had a lot more than that. You know, that's a lot of oomph. And then, you know, it'd be interesting to see what they do with the turbo and the Turbo S, because they are continuing for now, but they'll be updated in due course.
Yeah. So now, the turbo is interesting to me because, so there's an electric motor, we're looking at some of the visuals, if you guys are going to watch us on YouTube, is the electric motor fits into the transmission, into the PDK. And then there's an electric motor in the turbo. It's an electrically driven turbo. Now, what they did is they went to a single turbo. They made it larger, which typically would require more exhaust gases and more heat to get it spinning on the low end. So you'd get more turbo lag on the low end before this single turbo would kick in. But the electric motor in the turbo gets it spooling up off the line much quicker before the engine can take over and completely drive that turbo. So they're trying to eliminate that turbo lag and give you that low end power by moving the turbo with an electric motor in the lower RPM.
Yeah, because obviously what an electric motor does is give you that instantaneous torque. So you sort of fill in the gap. So
and we've seen it on like on what McLaren's done, even Acura NSX, is they're saying, hey, you know, we're doing this higher RPM engine, and we're going to use the electric motors of like on our NSX to give you some of that low end torque, fill in the gap of the turbo lag with those electric motors. And Porsche is doing it with an electronically driven turbo, which is interesting.
Yes. And what I think they've been able to do, and we're actually driving it in a few weeks in Spain. Sadly not me. But we are going off to drive it in Spain. And I think it's going to be it's going to be really interesting to see how they've integrated all this into like the braking and just how it all comes together. It feels like a very sort of sensible approach for them. You know, they're determined to keep the 911 as gas engined as long as possible. And, you know, that is their strategy. The Macan, the Boxster, the Cayman will all go electric. They might keep making the old Macan as long as possible, but basically you're going to have Macan EV, which is obviously arriving in the US this year, plus the Boxster and the Cayman, which we expect to maybe even see by the end of this year, at least I don't think we're going to drive it. Hopefully we're going to see it before the end of the year. And then the 911, the Panamera, the Cayenne retain their sort of gas-powered propulsion. So that they will hang on as long as possible with a gas-powered 911 of some description. And maybe this is a way of kind of prolonging its life. The problem with the manuals actually is actually to do with emissions and how you control the fueling and everything else. So it's not to do with demand. Demand is plentiful, particularly in the US. It's not to do with manufacturing. It's to do with how you get it through the emissions regulations, because with the flappy paddle gearbox, you can control the fuel. You can do a lot more to manage the emissions than you can with the manual. And sometimes that's also why you get these kind of big spreads in the gear ratios and what have you.
Yeah.
And you have less speeds as well. You know, it'll be 7-speed, not 8-speed, which this is. So yeah, they'll keep hanging on. They'll keep fighting this. Personally, I don't like the digital dials. And I also miss, although it was never quite right putting like a plastic key into a slot and turning it. It was still, I don't know, like push button. It's a bit, you know.
Yeah. Well, this is another thing. So I've got a couple more thoughts on this, maybe a few more questions. Let's just take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Okay, so yes, we brought up I'll bring up the image of the dash. So again, if you're looking at this on the YouTube channel, on the 911, yeah, it's got the digital Dage cluster. I mean, the graphics today, they look good. It's going to be very responsive, arguably even more accurate than analog gauges. But yeah, it still just kind of looks a little out of place in the 911. It looks kind of flat and it looks just a little too digital. And, you know, like when Jaguar did it years ago, it wasn't that bad, because in the Jag, you're like, I get it. It still sounds good. Even in the F-Type, you know, and it's kind of a gnarly sounding, you know, supercharged engine, yeah, and all the crackle and the downshifts, and it was fine with the gauges, but there's just something about it in this car that probably will be missed. Now,
I think you buy a 911 for the heritage, don't you? And they can make the digital dial. The one interesting thing they can do, I think they're going to have different digital dial setups. You know, they're going to change how you do the rev counter. You could also go retro. You could get some like cool, you know, 80s 911 or 60s 911. You can have a different, you know, or maybe pull different images from race cars or whatever to give you, you know, to have fun with it. But I think the whole point of buying a 911 is, it's still a little bit analog. It's still that kind of, you know, you're still going back to even the 356. It's all about that kind of rear engine, visceral, flat six. I don't know.
Yeah. Although, but you're right. Like, take a page out of Mustang's book and be able to load up a couple of different sort of retro looking gauges and things like that in there. If you're gonna make it digital, at least give them the option of having different looks available in there, other than just your normal like sport mode and sport plus mode. And
yeah, you're right, because if you get in the Mustang today, you just load up the Fox body dials and you're done.
Yeah, and then they just did on their anniversary car, they just did, we just did like a 60s style gauge package in there, and that's now available as well. So
but again, it's cool, but it's not what a 911 is, right? I mean, I own a 911, an air-cooled one, and the whole point is that you're just feeling the history. And every little bit of like digitalization just takes you away from that. But look, would it stop me buying one? Absolutely not. No. I was actually, when I specified it up, I was thinking, you know, what I need to do is start putting money aside, you know, hope I get lucky in the market or something. Because this could be, you know, when you turn 10 years time or whatever, maybe I retire from the industry or whatever, might be more than 10 years time, whatever. Eventually, this is like your keep forever car, isn't it? This is like, okay, I'm 60 years old. I'm buying this. This is it. This is me done.
Okay, and that, although, but maybe, because now
more than, I'd like
got,
to point out, it's more than 10 years to 60, so yeah, just so we're clear.
But maybe it's the forever car, because that was the other thing I was thinking about. I was actually thinking the opposite. I was thinking, hey, if you're going to get your forever Porsche, hybrid is probably not the one you want. The hybrid one with the battery and all this additional technology and the electric motors, and then... Couple thoughts is we just haven't seen it enough, especially in Porsche because it's so new. Is if you put a lot of miles on it, does that stuff break? If you put no miles on it, does it break from sitting around? You know, like your LaFerrari or your McLaren P1 or something. So, I think there's probably a better forever Porsche to get right now today.
I mean, honestly, the nicest Porsches, we haven't driven this one yet, but normally the nicest 911, actually, the current 992s is the T. That's the pure car. Just the, you know, you don't need more power. That's the keep forever. But you know, it's still a chunk of change.
It's still a chunk of change, quite a bit.
It is exciting though. Like, and I mean, this is like a mid-cycle facelift, so you know, it's not. And aesthetically, it doesn't look... The GTS, if you'll recognize, it got like little aerodynamic fins on the front.
Yeah, we saw that.
Which look a bit... Yeah, which look okay. But it's not like a big... It's not like a big aesthetic overhaul. And, you know, the next one's still a few years away. So, but it's still exciting. A new 911 is always exciting.
It is exciting. And what I like that they've done here is they've introduced this into one of the particular trim models, like the GTS, and made it available as... a coupe, a convertible, a Targa, a rear-wheel drive, an all-wheel drive, but it's all GTS. So you can still pick and choose all around this hybrid model. Like you said, 911T, turbos, GT3s, base Carrera. They didn't say across the board that everyone is going to be hybrid now. All of the non-GT cars are going to be hybrid or something like that, right? And that's it. You can shop around this particular model, but I think as a GTS, this kind of fits into the lineup pretty good because of the performance and some of the options and things that you would normally kind of get included with a GTS. I agree with you. I always thought a GTS version of a Porsche was always sort of the most nicely equipped, sport oriented, and kind of bang for your buck, if you will, because you kind of get some cool features.
If you're not going to take it to a track day, if you're not, or if you don't feel the crushing need to have like a GT3, actually a GTS is just the nicest everyday Porsche. The T gives you 90% of what a GTS is, but if you got the money, pretty much across the lineup, the GTS is the one to have. They're also, if you look back at historically, it tends to be the GTS that holds its value best, like a 997 GTS at the moment, because it's a long way to a GT3, but isn't as compromised as a GT3 and isn't as hard work to look after and stuff. So yeah, well worth a look.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that's what they meant to do with the hybrid system, was make it about the best driving, best performing street 911 that you can get out there.
Yeah, and I think without, if they'd called it, oh, hey, it's the new 911 hybrid, I think that everybody's like, oh, sounds like a Prius. Whereas I think that what they're saying is, it's a GTS, it's got more power. You know, this is the ultimate street 911, done. And I think psychologically that makes a huge amount of sense. So, you know, Porsche don't screw many things up. And I'd be amazed if this isn't good.
I wonder if, you know, in a year from now, they'll release the numbers on the car. They'll tell us more about how it's sold and how it's doing. And instead of like rolling it into, you know, how the 911 is doing.
I mean, it's the expensive one. So that's going to, you know, it's never going to do the massive numbers because the S and the Carrera are going to be cheaper. But
yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. I was looking, some of the team said, oh, can we get one for the long-term test fleet? And then to your point, I was like looking at the cost. I was like, it's going to be the best part of 200 grand by the time you've got it like as you want it. I was like, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Shouldn't have bought that Fisker.
Shouldn't have bought the Fisker.
Then you would have had a little 911 GTS money in your pocket.
We're now with the Fisker. We continue to own the car. We continue to drive the car. You know, they took away the roadside assistance. We got an email that said that roadside assistance not happening. So we strongly recommend that you take out roadside assistance, i.e., like, you know, get Googling. So it just remains to be seen. It's very sad, but it looks like, you know, the office is actually literally about a mile and a half away from where I live, the headquarters, that's all shut down. So, you know, it does feel like, you know, we're just waiting for the referee to step in and stop the fight. And that's a real shame.
Yeah, it is. I had high hopes for them. I liked what they were doing and it looked like it could be a really cool vehicle. And
it's just not finished.
Yeah.
But the other one that we drove this week was the, you know, we talked quite a bit about the Ioniq 5N a couple of weeks ago. This time we drove the Rally, the Mustang Mach-E Rally.
Yeah.
Which is a bit like the Ioniq 5N. It's like, how can we have fun with an EV and, you know, try and give the, you know, give the Mach-E a bit of a kind of midlife kick up the derriere. And it's a load of fun.
I was looking at the write-up that you guys did with this, and I don't know if you had a chance to drive it yet, but whoever you
I don't do
my,
you know, to... I don't get to do the fun stuff. I don't get to go to a rally school and play around in the dirt, you know.
Kurt, but have you been driving it on the street? Because my first thought was, I bet they've got the suspension tuned in a way that it's probably really comfortable, kind of like the way an F-150 Raptor really is kind of nice on, you know, like we've got some pretty terrible roads out here and our freeways are just so bumpy that if you're in a Raptor, it's actually pretty decent. It's pretty livable. And you kind of need like an off-road suspension on the 405 out here just to have a pleasant ride.
Yeah, that's exactly what Kurt from the team, one of our best test drivers, drove it, went out and drove it. And yeah, he said it's got the MagnaRide suspension. And yeah, to your point, the Ranger Raptor's the same. Ranger Raptor works on the road, got a little bit of compliance. And he said it's the nicest riding of all the Mach-E's. It looks cool. It looks cool. It's, you know, it's fun. It's just, you know, it is just a chunk of change again. But have a look. If you're serious about one, I think they start at 60 grand, but have a look for the lease deals, because then you're into, as we keep banging on about, then you're into the tax credits. And Ford's got a lot more aggressive on its lease deals than it used to be. Ford leases used to be, when we leased my Genesis GV60 for the family, we wanted a Mach-E, and the lease deals were like, oh yeah, that'd be 950 a month. That's not happening. But now they're a lot more competitive.
Yeah, they're nearly half.
Yeah, they're nearly half. And some of that's the tax break. Some of that's just because they need to be competitive. And yeah, this looks a load of fun. And maybe in the future we'll get it together with the Ioniq 5N because they're similar money. And I think that would be a great comparison.
That'd be a fun little comparison, yeah.
Yeah, it's also kind of nice that we've reached a stage where people are saying like, well, actually, we got to do more with an EV than just go fast in a straight line, because as soon as everything's doing 0 to 60 in 3 and a bit seconds, frankly, the rest of it becomes irrelevant. So how can we make EVs fun? Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot that you can do with the electronics in terms of drift modes and all that kind of stuff and fake sounds and just... So it's great to see Ford doing it. It's great to see Hyundai doing it. Ironically, like the guy behind, I think we talked about this before, the guy behind the Ioniq 5N was actually ex-Ford Performance and did the Focus RS. So there's quite a lot of sharing between those companies. And
yeah. Although we said that was a fun car to drive. We just said it's a fun car to drive and Twitter lost their mind.
Yes, it is a fun car to drive.
Yeah.
And so is the Mustang Mach-E Rally.
Yes.
Fun car. Fun EVs are fun.
It is a fun EV to drive.
What's your list of like fun EVs? I mean, the Taycan Turbo GT, that was a fun EV. Yeah, plenty of fun EVs.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Twitter.
I mean, you had a taste of my world, Matt. We've just done we've actually just gone live with our wrap up of the, we had a Model Y Performance that we ended up keeping for 4 years, partly because of the pandemic, partly because it was still relevant. And we've got rid of it. And we had really kind of, nobody really loved it. It was an early car. The ride quality wasn't great. And we were all a bit like, about it. So, you know, stand by for a whole bunch of abuse.
Did you guys get into the new Model 3 yet? You bought
Yeah, we
one,
bought one. But we bought one.
But you have it already.
Yeah. We've had it for a couple of months. If you check out our long-term test blog, yeah, we've had it. It's a much improved, the Highland, the, well, it's not called Highland. I think that was the internal coding. But they've made a good step in a lot of key areas. The interior is a lot better. It's more refined. Things like the range and the performance haven't gone up, but frankly, they were okay. The bits that they've improved, the interior particularly, awesome stereo, awesome hi-fi as well.
Because I was going to ask, are the upgrades on the new Model 3, the improvements made, enough to justify getting the new one, or is the better deal just getting the used previous version now? Because they got to be pretty affordable.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to last week's show, we spent an hour debating this. I mean, given the lease cost of the new one, it's an appreciable step. If you can afford it, I'd say lease a new one because it's a better vehicle.
Yeah.
Okay. The only thing is with leasing
a Tesla.
But if you're
going to buy it for cash, then of course you're...
Depending on your loan, then we cut back into like, if you're going to loan on a used car, is that worth, you know, is that going to be a lot more higher interest rate than a new car? I think you just got to do your maths. But as a product, it's a lot better. But how much better depends on how deep your pockets are and all the rest of it.
Yeah. And whatever the used prices are on there, if you can find something decent to get a really good price on a used Model 3, and there's nothing wrong with that car per se.
I drove past where our test track is. I was looking, drove past a field just nearby, and I had to pull over because like, what the hell's that? And it was literally a field full of Teslas. You remember the days when you had to wait? It's like a field full of Model Ys.
It's, and when do you guys get your Cybertruck,
it's the 64. Well, no, it's the $100,000. I was going to say $64,000 question. It's the $100,000 question. Still TBC, still waiting for this one. We were told anywhere between April and June. And as we record this, it's the 30th of May. So presumably pretty imminently.
Listen, I'm not trying to influence you or your staff at all, but you pass on one Cybertruck and get rid of one Fisker and you almost have one new hybrid GTS.
That's undeniably true.
Just pointing that out. But, just saying. But
which probably won't lose much money. I mean, the other thing is like, how much money is it going to lose? Maybe not much. It's all about the cost of change.
Well, the Cybertruck prices that were high and a few people that were selling them, that's now leveled out.
Yeah, that's not happening anymore.
Yeah,
we're buying a Macan EV. So trying to argue to the business that it's editorially justified to buy two Porsches in a given year, probably not happening. Probably not a good career discussion. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right. I think we're gonna wrap things up. Is there anything that we were missing?
One other thing, and maybe we save this for next week, but if you are hunting around YouTube, we have our wrap-up video of the Mustang GT500.
Yeah.
Which, and that's been proving super popular on YouTube. We had a load of fun making it. We just absolutely loved that car. So it's more trying to be objective journalism. Honestly, it's more like a eulogy. So it's we just, all of us love that car. Just a fantastic piece of kit. So it's funny. We had a bit of fun. Like one of the producers was sort of shouting at me off camera, "Can we buy a new one? Can we buy a new one?" And then, like, if you read the YouTube comments, it's all like, "You guys gotta buy a new one," or like, "Buy a GTD." I was like, "Yeah, GTD is 350 grand if you can get one."
Yeah,
so I think
that's
happening.
They're already sold out. The first two,
and they're already sold out. Yeah. So, yeah, another GT500 though. Like, yeah, it was really fun making the video and just looking back on what we've done with it. And we have another special tribute video coming out before too long, which is looking at all the kind of U-drags it was involved in and stuff like that. So. Yeah, we all shed a tear when that one. It's quite weird when a car is so universally loved as that one. So that's a video worth checking out. You can see me close to tears.
It is a fun car to drive. But that being said, my Mach 1's got the tune. It's done and it is ready to go. So
are we ready? Bringing it down the track. We'll do a car special down the Edmonds test track.
Before your guys start shedding tears and wanting you to buy a new GT500, take a look at what a twin turbo version with a 6-speed manual is and see what it does to the fun factor. It may not even be as fast, but I'm curious to see what you guys think about it. And although the Pilot Cup Sport tires, I took those off. They're a pain in the ass to drive on during
not that great for getting it off the line, but
yeah,
they're good for going around corners.
All right, we're going to wrap things up. Thanks so much. And yeah, we'll figure something out with this car now that it's here. I'll even wash it before I bring it down.
Sounds good.
Thanks, guys. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.